is the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
Good afternoon. A heated day in the Senate inquiry into supermarket pricings as the head of major supermarkets front the senators for the first time. And it got testy.
Senator, I've answered the question many times.
You have not answered the question, Mr. Banducci. Honestly, I'm not interested in your spin or your bullshit. This is a Senate inquiry. Answer the question.
Hidden in there was a lot of questions too about producers and the relationship between those who are farming the product and those who are selling it at major supermarkets, which together, Coles and Woolworths, who are appearing before the Senate inquiry today, dominate with 65% of the market. Examples like this were put to supermarket leaders.
You had an oversupply issue. You phoned that supplier and asked them to delay delivery by 2 weeks of their lambs. 2 weeks later, the lambs were then oversized and out of spec, and you fined that supplier for supplying those goods.
What is the answer to that? It's coming up for you today on the Country Hour. Not only are the leaders of supermarkets facing those senators, the leaders of Bunnings, which a number of suppliers have had made complaints about during the process of the Senate inquiry, have also been fronting senators, and we'll bring some of that to you today. So you're going to hear a lot of politicians asking questions, a lot of leaders of industry trying to answer those questions today on the program, but I think it's worth your time, so we'll get through that together. Also, if you tried to sell lambs at Bendigo yesterday, there was a huge drop in price with the blame being handed to the conflict between Israel and Iran. What does conflict in the Middle East do to prices at the Bendigo sale yards? We are going to find out that together today on the Country Hour.
The Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
Let's start, though, with supermarkets. Both major supermarkets that control 65% of the Australian market are appearing before senators today. Coles are just about to start their appearance, but earlier today, outgoing Woolworths boss Brad Banducci, who famously stopped an interview with Four Corners into his company's conduct, has been up and fronting the senators before he leaves Woolworths. And it's been intense. The hearing was even suspended for a private meeting with the outgoing chief executive while the committee decided if it would hold him in contempt. That exchange all came down to a technical business term, ROE, return on equity. I think it's important to hear some of that exchange, and then we'll get into the supermarket relationship with producers. But here is Green Senator Nick McKim speaking, asking questions of Woolworths CEO, Brad Banducci.
Do you know what the average ROE for banks in Australia is? It's less than half of yours. It's about 10%. We have rapacious banks in this country, either the most profitable banks in the world or close to the most profitable banks in the world, and you are making 2.5 times their return on investment. What have you got to say to that?
Senator, you just quoted return on investment, and I'm talking
Return on equity.
And our return on investment is 10% post-tax. The EBIT margin, which our net profit after tax, which we talked to, is 2.5 cents in a dollar spent at Woolworths Group.
I understand the figures you want to talk about.
It's just over 3% right now for the incredibly important 350,000 retail investors that hold our shares. Indeed, at the moment, it is lower return on dividend than you might get from money in the bank.
How much did you make in the last financial year, Mr. Banducci?
Senator, that's available in our annual report.
How much did you make in the last financial year?
I'm simply asking
you the question, Mr. Banducci. How much did you make in the last financial year?
Senator, as I said, it's available in our annual report.
I know it's available in your annual report, Mr. Banducci, but I'm asking you, in front of a Senate committee, how much you made in the last financial year. I mean, what's your reluctance to disclose that? Hey, round, I'm not asking to the nearest cent. That wouldn't be reasonable. Just in round terms, what did you make last financial year?
Senator, my base salary at Woolworths is $2.6 million. And then I get a short-term bonus and a long-term bonus, depending on our performance relative to the metrics I've just talked about. On top of that.
All right. And what did that add up to, your total remuneration in the last financial year?
As you would see in our annual report, it is $8.4 million in total, Senator.
Senator Stirl.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Mr. Banducci, the passion that Senator McKim, the Chair, has for this inquiry is undisputable, and he is the Chair, and he is not going to stop the line of questioning. And I'm just, as a long-term senator here, can I just advise that I understand you would have workshopped your way through with your executive team, but in the light of all the cameras in the room, Mr. Banducci, you're not doing yourself a favour. You don't need to preach from a little fat old truck driver, and we know that information is available, but I think just to assist for the committee, if you could please be direct, then we can move to other questions and other questioners around the table. We've got a number of occasions. You don't need to take my friendly advice, but it ain't going to help, and it's not looking good for you at the moment, right, Mr. Banducci.
Thanks.
Thank you, Senator.
Thanks, Senator Stirl. So 8.4 million was your total remuneration package in the last financial year, Mr. Banducci?
Senator, yes, it was.
Thank you. So you made 8.4 million, but you don't know what your return on equity was? CEO of a multi-billion-dollar corporation booking, you know, billion-dollar-plus profits every year, and you don't know what your return on equity is. Is that right?
Senator, the equity value in Woolworths goes up and down over time. The key number that we focus on, as I've tried to be helpfully suggesting, is return on investment. That is the key number that is measured in the business. Common finance number, you put a dollar in, what return do you get on that dollar that you put into your business?
So your remuneration is somewhere about 150 times what one of your shop floor workers receives. Do you reckon you provide 150 times more value to Woolworths than one of your shop floor workers?
Senator, I'm acutely aware of the privilege I have of being the CEO of Woolworths, and I try and get up every day and do everything I can to fulfil my obligation and the privilege I have as the CEO of Woolies.
Do you accept that return on equity is one of the accepted measures and an accepted benchmark for assessing a company's profitability?
Senator, our two key measures are return on investment and return on shareholder return.
You've repeatedly
said
that.
Those are the two key measures.
Mr. Banducci, you've repeatedly refused to answer my question on return on equity. I feel compelled to advise you that it is open to the Senate to hold a witness in contempt when they refuse to answer a legitimate question. I also feel compelled to advise you that that opens up a range of sanctions, personal sanctions, that can be applied against you if that's what the Senate decides to do. Having said that, I ask you again, is your return on equity in the last financial year about 26%?
Senator, I've answered the question many times.
You have not answered the question, Mr. Banducci. Honestly, I'm not interested in your spin or your bullshit. This is a Senate inquiry. Answer the question. Was your return on equity 26% in the last financial year, which is more than 2.5 times the average ROE enjoyed by Australian banks, which are the most profitable banks in the world? Is that true or not?
Senator, I sit here before you very respectfully saying we measure ourselves return on investment.
Very respectfully not answering the question.
Total shareholder returns.
That left the Senate inquiry in an interesting place, and which went into a short recess to have a private meeting with Woolworths boss Brad Banducci, whilst the committee decided if it was going to hold him in contempt for not answering those questions. After a short recess and then another 15 minutes of questioning, this is where that ended up.
Just to be clear, do you personally, Mr. Brad Banducci, do you know what the return on equity was for Woolworths in the last financial year? Do you know the answer to that? Do you know what the ROE was for Woolworths in the last financial year or not? It's an abundantly simple question. It would really assist the committee, Mr. Banducci, if you would simply answer it with clarity for the committee.
Senator, I don't focus on that number. It is not a number we focus on and not a number we report to. We focus on these numbers that I've talked to. If it helps the committee in terms of us moving on, I don't know that number and I'm happy to take it on notice.
That's where we got some of your texts coming into 0467 842 722. Tom saying, Green Senator talking like that. Surely not. Wouldn't be impressed. Macca says, I'm going to swear it's criminal for that guy to get paid that much. Hope he sleeps well at night, says Macca. And was big businesses are better at farming farmers than farmers are at farming? They consistently abuse their size and market power. Time for compulsory codes of conduct and time to enforce the rules of the game. Not happy, says Ron. A lot of the texts coming in. We'll get to more of those in a minute. But with that key, very technical point about return on equity discussed for hours at the Senate inquiry this morning, the hearing could move on, spend much more time learning about the treatment of producers by Woolworths. Here is Mr. Banducci answering questions from New South Wales Nationals Senator Ross Cadell about the treatment of producers and the rules of the game if people are supplying a major supermarket.
Is flooding the market with stores, and I notice we talk about, you spoke about the threat of Costco, you talked about the threat of all these other grocery makes. In your own annual report, you said that this year, in the 23 annual report, 24.5 million customers served weekly. That is an increase of 8% on the 22.7 million customers served weekly in the previous financial report. You are still growing, aren't you?
Senator, but if you look at the number of stores, which I think is the heart of your question, the amount of square meterage we've put on the ground is lower than the population growth of Australia over the last 10 years.
But your growth of 6% sales and 8% of customers visiting is exceeding population growth.
Yes, as I say, we need to look through the units of that. And so the
going down to some specifics, your treatment of small suppliers. Mm. Another statement from you today is you're talking about choice. What we're looking at is power, because you can have 100 stores. If one of them sell one item and you sell 1,000, power is sell elsewhere. So I will give you a specific story. Sure. Within the last 2 years, one of your meat suppliers in New South Wales who grows lambs, you had an oversupply issue. You phoned that supplier and asked them to delay delivery by 2 weeks of their lambs. 2 weeks later, the lambs were then oversized and out of spec, and you fined that supplier for supplying those goods. How is that fair when they are fixing your problem to actually go back against a small supplier and punish them for that?
Senator, I'd love to take that on notice and look at the specifics of it, because that is not the way we would expect to operate. If you don't mind me making the difference between fresh is what you're talking about there and long life groceries, one of the key things we're doing is making sure we get the right range in every local community. So you've seen the range change by community. The reason for that is, firstly, our customers want and demand that and expect that from us. But secondly, it gives more opportunities for small suppliers to supply us. And having more local Australian producer suppliers is a good thing. It's a good thing for us as well as our consumers.
In Tasmania, we heard evidence of a cauliflower and broccoli, I think, supplier. Up to 40% of their goods gets ploughed back in before you'll even look, because it could be too big, too small, have a spot on it, these sorts of things. Are we not setting the specification of food so high that viable, good food, edible food, nutritious food is being wasted and artificially pumping up prices because farmers get nothing for those things?
Look, I think this is a very good question. The way we try and set our specifications on the products we sell is based on our customers' expectations. And, you know, in particular freshness, by the way, but just the broad. In some cases, they will judge the visuals and assume the expectation on freshness. So it is customer-driven expectations we have. We are aware at times this leads to the unintended consequence of challenges. Where we can, and there's a demonstrable a major event, we will adjust the specification. We talked about bananas earlier, but Cyclone Jasper last year was a really good case study. Hit far north Queensland, October, November. We adjusted the specification on bananas coming out of the region for that period. They just had more markings on them than usual to address the fear that half the crop could be left on farm. So we do try and dynamically do that. And then very importantly, in the last 2 years, we've introduced what we call the odd bunch, which is what it says. It's 20% cheaper in our stores, but it gives an ability for a product that doesn't fit this, the normal expectation, a customer who wants value can get that product, and hopefully it prevents it from being ploughed
but
in.
If farmers could get some money for their 20 to 40% they're ploughing back in, surely that would cheap. They'd be able to sell other stuff cheaper and Australians could eat better. Aren't you after Instagram-ready food, not nutritional food?
Look, as I say, the odd bunch is one mechanic for doing it, and it is going very well, Senator. And can we expand it? Yes, are we working to? Absolutely. We think that's another very important mechanic. But as I say, the key thing we're trying to balance is consumers do judge us on freshness at home. And so, and you know, they, you know, there's nothing an Australian hates more than throwing something away. So there is a balance there, but I do take your point.
You gave evidence earlier about the length of time for these small buyers, fruit and veg, and the turnaround there, and the market sets the price. I've received a text while we've been sitting here about from a grower, and it tells them that they have to please align. I love the language we use. I read in Bunnings yesterday that you're invited to take part in a review, which means come or you're out. A whole lot of buyers on a sheet I have been given, where they've put their bids in and their quantity, have this line: please align to $24. What am I meant to read that? I read it as, you will not get purchase offs unless you give us this price.
Senator, thank you. I'd need to look into the specifics of that if you're happy for us to do that. I'm very
fruit
happy
and
to make
but
sure.
But the general language, yeah, on a buying group, they put in their prices, and then the system we've got is this. On a Wednesday or a Monday, they're putting their quantity and their value. On a Tuesday, they get, this is what we'll offer you. On a Wednesday, if they agree to meet that price, they may get a contract. That's not a market setting. That's a dictation.
We do... I can only talk to what Woolworths does, Senator, not the email, yep, and happy to take that on notice as saying come back. I think this, again, we come back to fruit and veg. This is a really key issue for all of us to lean into. Just so everyone's aware, there's about 6.35 million tonnes produced a year. We take about 0.9 million tonnes or 0.92 or whatever the number is. We're about 16% of the overall market on fruit and veg, and about 65% of it is sold. Half is sold through the markets in Sydney and Melbourne and everywhere else, and there's a clearing price.
Yep.
And then the other half is engaged with directly by retailers such as us. So we're somewhere between 15 and 20% of the market. When we do that, we do send out to our growers and the 350 growers we work with intensively, and within a two-week period, ask them to confirm volume and what they see as the value, given that they do or sell products to many other ways. We then look at those prices and agree a price with them in the context of delivery into the distribution centre closest to them. So there is a market clearing mechanic that happens there. And, you know, it can be good or bad, I guess, depending on the week in terms of when it happens. But we don't try to explicitly force everyone down to a price.
That is Woolworths CEO, outgoing Woolworths CEO, Brad Banducci, appearing before the Senate inquiry into supermarket pricing. That is continuing. The head of Coles about to appear before this very same inquiry. We'll bring you more of that on the Country Hour tomorrow. Some of your texts coming in. This from Jono on the Borderline. Small suppliers like me are finished. Last sale in May 2023. Lambs, 45 kilograms, $1 per kilo live weight. I'm finished. This is the end of small family farming. Years too late for these inquiries, says Jono on the Borderline. Jono, thanks for your text. Another one, though, saying, very funny hearing a politician get angry with a businessman answering questions like a politician. And Brad Banducci from Woolworths should have been held in contempt and should have been put in a cell overnight, says this text, to think about his choice of words. No wonder Woolies act the way they do when they're rotten from the top down. That's the end of another text. You can send them in 0467 842 722 to send a text message to the Country Hour. Then there's this from Tom. Blame the government for only allowing two major supermarkets in this country for all of these years. Well, Tom, I'm interested in what you think. about the hardware sector as well, because Australia's biggest hardware chain has defended the way it's dealing with garden plant supplies in evidence to a Senate inquiry investigating supermarket price gouging. In earlier evidence to the committee, one plant supplier said it had been encouraged by Bunnings to produce new plants, only to have orders dwindle or cancelled, and another spoke of being treated like a slave. Emily Doak has more.
Bunnings executives told the Senate committee that out of the 1,200-odd nurseries in Australia, it buys from 220 plant suppliers and that it values those relationships highly. Senator Nick McKim put the concerns raised about Bunnings' purchasing practices to the chain's ethical sourcing manager, Laura Gaspert.
The committee's heard quite a bit of evidence from suppliers of plants to Bunnings that's been very negative towards Bunnings. We've heard words to the effect that Bunnings treats suppliers like slaves and like numbers, not people. Given the risk to people for coming out and making those allegations publicly, do you think those are reasonable allegations in the context of how Bunnings treats its suppliers? Like, what's your response to those allegations?
I think both my colleague and myself share a level of disappointment to hear about those supplier experiences. That absolutely has been my experience working for Bunnings. I've been with Bunnings for 5 years and I lead a team that engage directly with suppliers, and we have many channels that our suppliers can raise concerns. So suppliers can engage with us directly. There's a standing invitation by our executive team that all suppliers can reach out to them directly if they have any concerns. And then we also have a confidential whistleblower process. If suppliers would like to remain anonymous, that's an option for them as well.
Bunnings GreenLife category manager Belinda Rakers told the committee it provides weekly updates to suppliers about product performance, which helps guide their growing practices.
The trading terms doesn't outline any commitment of plants to be purchasing. But what we do with the suppliers is to provide all suppliers with weekly sell-through of those products in stores. As each one of our locations, we want each one to be relevant to the community in which it operates in. And it is a really customer-led offer. But the information that is provided to our suppliers helps them plan and forecast their growing.
Ms. Rakers told the committee that Bunnings only provides guarantees on orders when suppliers ask for it. And she said because supply agreements aren't exclusive, nurseries are free to sell to other retailers. Senator McKim asked about market share.
Look, just to be clear, even on your evidence about 25% of market share, that's not much short of the market share of either Coles or Woolworths, just so that we're clear here. I don't know what the market share is that you have. I hear your evidence, but that's a significant share of the market. And for some growers, you would make up a far greater percentage of what they provide into the sector. So wouldn't it be fair on your growers to include in your supplier agreements a commitment to purchase a certain amount of plants for them? Wouldn't that help with the viability of the sector?
Senator, we feel that the information that we provide weekly provides our suppliers with complete visibility of how their products are performing in the stores.
But Senator Ross Cadell wasn't happy with those responses.
I'm not hearing a lot of facts. I'm hearing a lot of opinions, a lot of very clever words. We've got you rely on, we feel, we all take contracted but nothing's contracted, the customer-led offer, which basically means risk-free for you because you're telling them what the customers want, you're going to hold no stock. I'm even worse. I used the phrase the other day that your supply agreements look like nailing jelly to the wall for all the effective that is. So let's get some facts. You have 220 suppliers. How many of those supply agreements have minimum order requirements for delivery?
Senator, I don't have any of that information in front of me at the moment. Our supplier trading terms are reviewed annually.
I don't want to know if they're annual. I don't want to know that. I want to know how many have minimum order requirements.
Sorry, Senator, I don't have that.
Okay.
Could I ask, please, that you take that question on notice and come back to the committee?
That is Committee Chair Nick McKinn ending that questioning from Senator Ross Cadell to Bunnings leaders there into as part of the Senate committee hearing into supermarket pricing. So you heard there, and Ross Cadell even goes further to talk about how even with regards to supermarkets, there have been some positive submissions made. When it comes to Bunnings and supplying there, there have been none made. And he put that to Bunnings leadership, who denied any fault. What is it like to supply Bunnings after producers who supplied the company said it left them feeling like slaves? Brooklyn's nursery owner, Karen Brock, made and a submission to the inquiry. She says the stress of supplying Bunnings was so bad, it threatened her marriage.
We were, my husband in particular, we was working for like 4:30 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, 7 days a week, years on end. We didn't have a holiday for 12 years.
But why is that? Why was it so hard? I mean, you made a choice to supply Bunnings, but
Did you
make money? You obviously kept going.
Well, it's a bit of a trick because you start off, everything's going really well, like any new marriage or relationship. And as the years go on, people change. And there was a really distinct cultural change around 2010 to 2012 in that time frame where suddenly partnerships or working with you was not a keen focus. Now, unfortunately, by this stage, based on your previous experience, and yes, we were making some money at that stage. It wasn't a lot, but we had enough to hire, you know, 2 to 3 people to assist us. And then suddenly we were moving to robotic assistance because we couldn't get our prices up, but our cost of goods was going up and our infrastructure cost was rising. And then it got to the point where you're made to feel poorly because you don't dare ask for a price increase because we have to look after our customers. And we've got to keep the price low to make sure that the customers are getting the best product. And we're going to sell lots of your plants by doing this.
So over 13 years you were a supplier. How many price increases did they give you?
One.
Over 13 years. So in the end...
And that was in 2008.
Right. So were you selling plants at a loss?
We were actually looking at lean process management to the point where we were so lean that it was just the two of us and a robot who was doing all the plants. The trouble is you get to a point where we actually were just churning over money to pay for the bank loan for the robot, the bank loan for the greenhouses, your mortgage. So you were literally paying off your infrastructure to serve them, but you actually weren't paying yourself.
And in terms of, you know, knowing what you were going to produce, because at one point I think you had 26% of the available store space for plants in the Tasmanian Bunnings. Was that sort of the same from year to year?
It was incrementally growing at that stage up until about 2014. And again, remember I said about the time of change, we were visual merchandising. So basically, very similar to a supermarket, they say, we want your product on this space here. And it is up to you to make sure that that space is chock-a-block full at all times. And it had to be literally 12 months of the year. You had to make sure that you had stock on those shelves. They were carefully monitoring how your stock turned over. So our stock would, you know, in some of our ranges would sit on the shelf for maybe 2 weeks. Other stocks would sit there for 4 weeks. And if it went up to 6 weeks, they'd say, well, you're obviously not presenting the stock well enough, or you had to keep it fresh. So we would have to take back anything that didn't sell that would be credited against our account.
That's Karen Brock, owner of Brocklands Nursery, speaking there to Fiona Breen about the stress of supplying plants to Bunnings. Your texts are coming in. I can see them, but I better get to rural news first. We'll come back to them with the weather in a moment. Faith Tabaluyan has rural news today. Good afternoon, Faith.
G'day, Woz. One of Australasia's biggest plant-based meat manufacturers is shutting down, with its CEO declaring the plant-based bubble has burst. The New Zealand-based SunFed Meats started in 2015 and has been selling its meat alternatives into Coles and Woolworths here in Australia under labels such as chicken-free chicken and bull-free beef. In a blunt message posted to the company's Facebook page, SunFed founder and CEO Sukul Lee says investors had written the company off and it no longer had the finances to move forward.
Our inventory in Australia ran out in January, which is why we are no longer available in Woolworths Australia. For New Zealand, the remaining inventory is projected to run out in the next 2 months. Long story short, SunFed's VC investors had written SunFed off. Essentially, a lot of VC investors had jumped into the plant-based gold rush, thinking they could get fast valuation returns similar to what they're used to in the virtual world. But manufacturing and FMCG are in the physical world with a lot more complexity and moving parts, and is generally a longer-term play as you have to build real things. So despite SunFed's self-evident competence in unique products and manufacturing and FMCG, SunFed's VC investors did not see value in that, and that is, of course, their prerogative, as they can put their money elsewhere where they can get bigger, faster, easier valuation returns. Regardless, it is a fact that the plant-based bubble burst and the category has been undergoing a reality check. And with the unfavorable market conditions, I had to make the responsible decision of shutting the company down in a solvent, orderly fashion.
Turning to bird flu, the spread of avian influenza into American dairy cattle has reached 26 dairy herds in 8 US states. That includes Idaho, Texas, Kansas, New Mexico, North Carolina, South Dakota, Michigan, and Ohio. In fact, the spread has prompted US vets to rename avian influenza in dairy cattle as bovine influenza in a bid to, quote, maintain confidence in the safety and accessibility of beef and dairy products for consumers. The American Association of Bovine Practitioners last week released a letter saying avian influenza virus type A H5N1 in cattle, quote, does not cause high morbidity and mortality as it does in birds. Returning home, the Almond Board of Australia says it expects the industry to be worth $2 billion in the next 5 years, with growing demand internationally and at home. The board's final report on the 2023-24 season details record sales, more than 131,000 tonnes, with buyers clearing out Australia's unsold almond stock from previous seasons. Chief Executive Tim Jackson says the demand is being met by supply from established trees, which is good in a lower producing season.
We had an intake of 103,000 tonnes for the year, and every year we the marketers and processors carry in stock from the previous season to ensure that there's a consistent supply. But this year we've seen, for the first time ever in the industry, we've seen our sales outstrip our annual production. So instead of 103,000 tonnes of product being sold, we've sold 131,000. So we've pretty much cleared out the warehouse for a new season. Certainly free trade agreements in China and India have played a large part in our growth in more recent times. Before the free trade agreement in China was in place, we sold about 300 tonnes into China, and last year it was 50,000. In India, the biggest consumer of almonds in the world, you know, we have a 50% tariff advantage over everyone else.
And the United States is famous for its love of hamburgers. But after years of drought, the US cattle herd is at its lowest point since the 1950s, and the supply of cattle is tight. Lean beef trimmings, the key to making a good burger, has this month reached a record price in the US of around 345 US cents a pound. It's forcing the states to increasingly turn to other countries for its grinding beef, and right now it's ordering plenty from Australia. Livestock and commodities analyst Ripley Atkinson is watching the trend.
Those volumes are down about 12% for the corresponding 4 weeks compared to last year, and 25% compared to the corresponding volumes in 2022. So that gives you an idea of reduction in supply. And obviously with cost of living pressures in the US at the minute, consumers are consistently turning to mince, obviously, and hamburgers and those type of things to be enjoying at home. And that demand is still robust, supply is lower, that therefore influences price.
Well, Woz, might be burgers all round to celebrate. And that wraps up Rural News.
Thank you very much for that, Faith Tavalu-Yan there with Rural News. And Nicole Varley, our market reporter, told me a great term years ago for the US and their hamburger market, particularly at this time of year. She described it as them coming into grilling season. So Yeah, look out. It's good to know where we're up to with US hamburger sales, particularly on our way into grilling season over there. 0467 842 722 is the text number. A few of yours coming in. Trent says, for a CEO of a massive organization to say I'll have to look into that is a joke. He knows what's going on. $8 million a year. Disgraceful, says Trent. This one says, hi, was it? Read the Woolies executive, $8 million salary. That's like $2,800 per hour. Wow. At the same time, our lambs just before Christmas were down to $50, down by $50 per head. I bet the chops weren't discounted. Small suppliers are stuffed. Best regards. I've nearly had enough, says the Marawini sheep farmer. More of your texts coming in. We'll get more of those in just a moment. There is this one from Tex saying, hi, we're planting canola around Yarrawonga, wondering when the next major weather event is predicted. Lincoln Traynor, senior forecaster at the Weather Bureau, is the person to answer that. Hi, Lincoln.
How you going, Warwick?
Mate, I've spent all yesterday talking about how boring the forecast was with Stephanie Miles. Where is there any rain on the horizon to get Tex excited at Yarrawonga?
Yeah, not a lot at the moment. I was thinking about that. And, I mean, at the moment, we're pretty close to average. So all the climate drivers from the Indian Ocean Dipole to El Nino to the Southern Annular Mode are all going towards neutral at the moment, which means weather will be close to average in autumn. It's suggesting in the long-range forecast below, slightly below median rainfall in the northern parts of Vic. And really, you're looking for that weekly front that sweeps through the state, you know, looking if you can get anything out of that. And at the moment, in the forecast, there's not a lot coming out of that front each week. So at the moment, the answer is not a lot of rain on the horizon at the moment.
All right, then we better get into the forecast proper. How's it looking today and for the rest of the week?
Well, there was, I mean, as you said, it's not an exciting pattern. We had a front clip the south of the state early this morning. We saw about 1 to 8 millimetres in the gauges around the Otway Surf Coast and near Wilson's Promontory. A little bit of rainfall there now, about 1 to 5 millimetres this afternoon so far. A little bit of fog in the south as well, and there has been some smoke haze. I'm sure that people are seeing a little bit in the air, particularly in the north. The forecast for today, as we said, is pretty close to average. So Mildura, 26, Shepparton, 23, Horsham, 21, Ballarat, 18, Wangaratta, 24, Bairnsdale, 21. I won't go through everything for the rest of the week, but what I can say is Thursday, Friday, it's getting a little cooler as we go into more of a southerly. We definitely still have some showers in the south, but it's pretty dry in the north. So that means Thursday, Friday, the temperatures are around Mildura 22, Shepparton 21, Horsham 18, Ballarat down to 15, Wangaratta 22, Bairnsdale 19. But then the high starts to move over us Friday into Saturday. And basically we are going into pretty sunny conditions across the weekend and Monday. So temperatures rising, Mildura will go 23 to 25. By Monday, Shepparton 23 Saturday to 24 by Monday, Horsham 20 to 21 by Monday, Ballarat 18 to 20 by Monday, Wangaratta 23 to 24, and then Bairnsdale will start at 19 on Saturday and 21 on Monday. So the weekend's going to bring sunshine, but unfortunately at the moment in the forecast, if people are looking for rainfall, there's not much there at the moment, Warwick.
Yeah, they're certainly so. But I suppose on the bright side, not a lot in the way of warnings either, Lincoln.
It is no warnings. It's a very settled week. So, yeah, nothing to be concerned about at the moment.
I always look for streamers and balloons to come from the ceiling when there are no warnings. It never happens, but, you know. We'll just mark it.
The golden ticket buzzer.
Yeah, we'll mark it in our own special way on the country. Lincoln, thanks for the update.
Thanks, Warwick. Take care.
Lincoln Traynor there, senior forecaster at the Weather Bureau, taking you through the full forecast. A couple of texts coming in. Someone loved this text so much, I've sent it four times. At least that's how our machines brought it in here. Damn, this is a spicy show today, mate. I'm loving it. thumbs up emoji, says that text. We only bring you the news when it's happening. Let's talk more seriously about your comments on this. Glenda says customer expectations have been driven and cultivated by the Woolworths business machine for years. A lot of you picking up on that point. Another text. Love how Brad Banducci blames customer expectations when they dictate what's on the shelf. Customer expectations are to look after the people who feed us and at a mutually accessible price. Choosing meat at the shop is like choosing an engagement ring. You want value, but you know it's going to hurt no matter what. Brett says, was that Woolies bloke is not very smart. He could have done what the state government or Andrew's government's done here with those inquiries and said at least he couldn't remember. Well, I think he tried that, Brett, at least in the line of questioning, but it seemed quite intense. Paul in Mount Beauty says this repeated garbage from the supermarkets that it's driven by customer expectations is absolute lying. It is the supermarket wanting to outflank the opposition by providing the fantasy version of a product. The shops then justify all the rejection of good quality, healthy produce by blaming the consumer. They need to be called out for this lie, says Paul. And one more text on this before we keep moving. He says, sadly, Woolies and Coles, when we get there, 1.5 travel, one way for me, are better than our local IGA price-wise. IGA price, choose the price range they sell in. Yes, they do put dollars back locally, boosted through COVID about the dollars he made as we couldn't travel. But yes, I agree, the two need to change on many levels. But in regional areas, we're being screwed over differently. Bring in Costco to regional areas. Masters was good, but sadly gone. Lots needs to happen. Yes, we sell to Coles our lambs, but we're getting out of it too. I'm a local farmer doing it tough, says that text. Hopefully I've conveyed that in the way you wish to send it through as well. Thank you to all of your texts. We'll get to more of them as they come in. But let's talk about the price of lambs, not just to major supermarkets, but to around the world. Because yesterday, this popped up in our market report from Bendigo. Significant price change. And the reason behind it that Jenny Kelly was reporting surprised me.
Not good news for producers today, with the new Iran and Israel conflict in the Middle East stopping air freight and taking $20 to $40 off light and MK-style lambs. Plain trade lambs under 24 kilos carcass weight also took a fair price hit of around $15 a head.
Yeah, Australian lamb producers caught up in the Israel-Iran conflict with grounded flights in the Middle East, halting an important trade market for our producers. As you heard, prices down and by up to $40 for lighter lambs at the Bendigo sale yards. And processor Midfield Meats is reporting that it's had some flights of product on its way to the region turned around. They've been telling the Weekly Times that. So I spoke to market analyst Olivia Agar from Nutrien about what was going on. This is what she had to say.
The MLA Bendigo sale yard report showed that it really was a demand issue that was impacting the Monday market, with their reports that air freight into the Middle East has been disrupted by the latest Iran and Israel conflict. So in particular, they saw lighter weight, so the bag lamb market was $20 to $40 per head cheaper, and that some of the regular processing orders weren't operating. But if you look at some of the other segments in the market, they still performed really well. So heavy slaughter lambs into the US did better this week. The six were a bit stronger as well. So it wasn't a total demand issue, and it really was that segment of the market heading to the Middle East that was disrupted.
Oh, there's a lot to unpack there. Can we start with the bag lamb market? What's the bag lamb market?
So it's the full lamb that typically heads towards the Middle East, and we really saw that market take off late last year. So if you look, at the 3 months to date, even we've seen 23,000 tons of lamb exported from Australia to the Middle East for those first 3 months of this year, and compared to last year, that same period, we sent about 11,000 tonnes. So, we've seen huge growth in that Middle Eastern market, and they really are a price market. The decline in value of lambs we saw over last year in particular really opened up the affordability of that product to the Middle Eastern market. So we've seen that since 2022, the Middle Eastern market share of Australian lambs grown from 13% to 20.6% last year, and then 27% for the first 3 months of 2024. So a really strong and important market for us at this time.
And when we say bag lamb, so it literally is a lighter carcass, sort of, you know, 18 kilos or less lamb, and the whole carcass is bagged and flown on a plane to the Middle East, and that's literally the market.
That's right. Yeah, that lighter sort of 18 to 19 kilo range is what suits that market and what they're after.
So the rockets fired and the drones fired from Iran towards Israel grounded a lot of flights in that area, and that's effectively ground that market to a halt for Australian producers. Is that what is being reflected through the sale yards?
It did temporarily. So Israel was forced to shut down their airspace for both domestic and international routes entirely on Saturday, and then they reopened it on Sunday morning. And the risk to aircraft in that region, it meant that Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon all chose to close their skies for that period, but they're all reopened their airspace now. So when that happened, you know, there are at least a dozen airlines that had to cancel or reroute their flights earlier in the week. But you know, Qatar, Emirates, a lot of them have managed to, you know, resume their suspended services and once the airspace began to reopen. But, you know, there are still warnings in place that there will be some flow-on impacts of the cancelled flights and disruption. But we should see that market return now that flights are moving through those areas again.
Yeah, so obviously it sounds like there's some good news there in terms of the market reopening up quite quickly after a fall this week at Bendigo. But does it show, I suppose, more widely the impacts that, say, conflict in the Middle East and what we've seen in Ukraine can have on Australian producers and their bottom lines?
Absolutely. You know, we see that disruptions to the global food supply chain will be extending well beyond this year in response to all the various geopolitical events that are happening. You know, there's a lot of volatility in the supply chain that comes with that and a lot of uncertainty as well. And there's certainly heightened risk in that region at the moment, which for the companies that are operating in those areas, will be constantly monitoring and assessing the risks. But yeah, we have seen, you know, the big impacts of that sort of geopolitical event across the year.
That is Olivia Agar from Nutrien having a chat there about sending lambs to the Middle East, and that being the reason, particularly with airspace closing down due to Iran-Israel conflict over the weekend, being a major reason why that market has slowed down. Midfield Meats, as I said, have been telling the Weekly Times that they've had flights turned around of their product as well. Gordon from Ballarat says, flying lamb to the Middle East, surely that's up there with flying fresh milk to China every day from Avalon. What do humans do with climate change and, ironically, the money for all that's coming in? The world's gone mad. Keep up the great show, says Gordon from Ballarat. It's a huge market, as you've just heard, though, especially as you look to things like live export of sheep from Australia being banned to get that amount of protein to that key part of the world where a lot of people live. Different ways are going to be found, and this has been one of those that has particularly kicked up significantly in recent years, the flight of bag lambs, sort of smaller size sort of lambs, and what you get cutlets from in the supermarket being flown as a whole carcass to the supermarket. To the Middle East. We've been speaking about supermarkets a lot today too. A lot of your texts coming in. Interesting. Robert says, hi Warwick, as a retired couple, we find supermarkets dictate what we can buy, as many items, including meat, are prepared in meal sizes for larger families. To say that it is a customer expectation. No. It is supermarkets telling us what we can buy. Jeff on the text says, when I was at school, I said supermarkets didn't put on specials. They hit producers, he's using a different word, to get lower prices. I'm over 70 now and nothing has changed. Lorraine says, though, we don't want Costco in regional areas, to that other texter. That texter might want Costco shift to where there is one, says Lorraine. So it's interesting, the debate between what you want from a supermarket and what you're getting from a supermarket in terms of are you someone who's always wanting the lowest price possible? Because this is what that inquiry is looking at right now. But they're also looking at the treatment of producers to make sure producers can invest in their businesses to hopefully one day provide lower prices? And is something being missed there in the race to the bottom of the lowest prices? You can tell me, 0467 842 722, or you can always ring 2 1300 977 222. Brett says, I reckon Brad Banducci will be looking for balloons and streamers from the ceiling when the Senate inquiry is over. That's in reference to the no warnings that we had from the Weather Bureau today too. So thank you very much for that, Brett, too. A lot of text coming in. Really interesting your thoughts on the actions of the supermarket and how that relates to producers, but also how it relates to your shopping habits. Coles up right now in front of senators. So when we know more, we'll bring more to you on the Country Hour. Tomorrow, actually, on the Country Hour, we've got an outside broadcast. We're heading to the Future Ags Summit Expo, big event run by the people behind Agritechnica, which is one of the biggest agricultural events in the world, in the beer halls of Hanover in Germany. Huge event. That happens every second year. People from all over the world go there to that event. They're now running events in Australia. This is one of their first. It's in Melbourne. We will broadcast from that tomorrow and on Thursday on the Country Hour as well. But if there's something from supermarkets we have to bring to you, of course, we will do that as well. Let's check in on markets and find out how they're selling today. We've just been hearing about the lamb market at Bendigo yesterday. Let's see if the drop in prices has continued and followed to Ballarat today. Shiona Lamb can give us that report and that information. Good afternoon, Shiona.
Good afternoon. Lamb numbers dropped to 33,000 drawn for. Quality slipped over the lighter store lambs. The trade lambs under 24 kilos presented from plain to very good condition, with several lots of secondary types lacking finish. Heavy trade and export lambs range from good to excellent. Store lambs sold 9 to 20 cheaper, light trade to 14 softer, medium and heavy trade 8 to 12 cheaper. Heavy exports sold to a top of $260 a head, selling from 10 to 15 back on last week's levels. Although the market ended softer, there were still sales holding firm on last week's prices for the really neat short-skinned trade lambs presenting in exceptional condition, while the secondary types received larger discounts across the yarding. Lambs back to the paddock sold 2 to 116 and lambs to feed on sold $108 to $148 a head. Light trade lambs under 18 kilos sold 63 to 116. Trade lambs 18 to 22 sold 114 to $146 a head. Lambs 22 to 26 kilos sold 130 to 175 to have an average range of 550 to 630 cents a kilo carcass weight. Agents are still to sell sheep. This is Shiona Lamb at Ballarat for MLA.
Thank you very much for that, Shiona. We'll have Wagga later in the week too, and Hamilton and Horsham to keep an eye on the sheep market for you. Let's go to Wodonga now and find out how cattle have been selling. Leanne Dax can take it away.
Good afternoon. It was varying price trends at Wodonga today. While the usual buyers were present at the sale, not all were active or fully engaged. Yearling heifers suitable for feedlot showed dearer trends. However, prices for feeder steers lost 20 cents. Medium weight feeder heifers ranged from 275 to 311, marking a gain of 11 cents. Big heavy feeder steers were firm. Trade heifers slipped 25 cents and traded from 244 to 326. Trade steers, these back five, selling at 270 to 352. Heavy feeder steers intended for processors were limited, trading at 270 to 305. Bullocks were steady, ranging from 292 to 335. Heavy heifers also declined 30 cents, with prices ranging from 246 to 324. In the cow sale, buyers showed keen interest in bids below 248 cents, with only limited sales exceeding this mark. On average, cows saw a decrease of 20 to 30 cents. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Thank you very much for that, Leanne. Gary from North with some good info too, saying bag lamb is an important market, has been for a long time. COVID put a stop to it with a lot of lack of flights. Thanks very much for that, Gary. A lot of texts also coming in. Brett, I better get that confirmed before I say it on the radio, but thank you very much for the info as well. Keep them coming. I'll read a few more before we go. Shepherd and Cattle though now with Nicole Varley.
Good afternoon. Well, off the back of a strong market last week, capital numbers remained on par. We had 1,700 head. Buyer attendance was also above the norm. However, prices failed to hold the momentum and took tumbles of 20 to 35 cents across numerous categories. The quality of the trade cattle offering was very plain, with a greater proportion of lighter baited veelers and store conditioned and crossy yearlings. Additional exporters in the heavy cattle section did buffer some of the price falls. However, that 20 to 30 cents is still seen across several of the grades, regardless of the quality. The best of the veal is made from 270 to 377 cents. Veal heifers 270 to 320, yearling steers 260 to 367, yearling heifer portion 240 to 320, the 400 to 500 kilo steers 285 to 312, 5 to 600 kilo steers 271 to 344, the 600 kilo plus steers 253 to the top of 344 there, also for some Euro steers. This is Nicole Varley from Shepparton.
Thank you very much for that, Nicole. That's about all the time we have for you on the Country Hour today. Thank you so much for being involved in the program. All the texts, all the comments. Remember, this program is podcast, so you can go back and listen to what was said. If you're supplying supermarkets and you want to provide us with information, you can do that. Send us an email, countryhour@abc.net.au. Especially if you think we're not getting it right or there's information we need to know. We're really open to do that. Victorian Country Hour is what you search for in your podcast app or in the ABC Listen app if you'd like to find our programs and listen back and then get in contact with us. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for all of your texts, all of your comments today. As I say, we'll be on the road for a couple of days, but we'll still bring you the important stories from, well, here and around the country and indeed the world. Catch you next week. Well, catch you tomorrow. Sorry, it's 1 o'clock.